nasty things to a woman, and then pointed a finger at Bullet and said, "Men don't need to demean to make a point. You got a beef with a woman, you sit your ass down and talk eye to eye. Hear what she has to say. Got it? A good percentage of the time, she's going to be right. And when she's not, she deserves your respect for speaking her mind." Harsher lessons came when Biggs would drag him out of bed to drive a drunk customer home, or tell him to get his ass on his bike and meet the Knights at some address in town, where they were taking a stance against one form of trouble or another. Bullet met his father's serious eyes, and he wondered how he could have ever been resentful of the man who had not only given him life, but had tried his damnedest to teach him right from wrong.
"Your little filly's quite the sales girl," Biggs said slowly.
He nodded toward Finley, who was sitting at a table with Dixie, Gemma, Crystal, and Penny, while Red, Chickie, and two other club members' wives leaned over the girls' shoulders. They'd been discussing the fundraiser ever since the crowd had thinned.
"She talked with all the members tonight, got the business owners to agree to hold some sort of raffle for the Beckleys. Digger's auctioning off 12 hours of his own time, equipment included. And Bud's offering up a bouquet delivery a month for a full year. Do you mind getting me a beer?"
"Sure, Pop."
As Bullet filled a frosty mug, Biggs continued telling him what Finley had accomplished.
"Butcher's raffling off a side of beef. Heck, son, she used that sweet smile of hers to convince Rebel and two other firemen to get into a dunk tank, which Crow's gonna build. She's got ticket sellers lined up and everything. And your gal's not stopping there. She and the girls have plans to visit local businesses and get them in on it. It's liable to be the biggest event to hit Peaceful Harbor in years."
"She's pretty amazing," Bullet said proudly.
His father lifted his beer in a toast and said,
"A miracle worker, if you ask me. We haven't been this busy in years. People like to eat."
Biggs's mustache twitched as a crooked smile appeared on his face.
"They say the way to a man's heart is through his stomach. You and I both know that's not true. We got much needier parts than our stomachs."
He took a swig of his beer. Bullet chuckled. Biggs had never been one to mince words.
"Nope," his father said. "It's not the food that brought everyone here tonight. That helped, of course. Finley can cook like nobody's business. But word's gotten around that Whiskey's has a new gal on board, and she's got a knack for making every single customer feel special. Pop, she's not here for good. You know that, right?"
His father took another pull on his beer, and his expression turned serious again.
"I'm aware. But I'm thinking you probably ought to fix that."
Bullet shook his head and crossed his arms, steeling himself for an internal battle.
"My girl's not going to spend her nights in a bar."
He wanted Finley where he was every minute of the day, but no matter how much he wanted that, he knew it wasn't best for her. She had dreams of expanding her catering business, and she hadn't come to Peaceful Harbor to give those dreams up.
"She's got a catering business to get off the ground. Hell, Pop, we're coming in Sunday so she can use the kitchen to get ready for an event." "You're coming Sunday? Not going riding with your brothers?"
Biggs wrapped his fingers around the head of his cane and pushed to his feet.
"Maybe while she's at the event, but Sunday's my only day off. If she's here, I'm here."
His father's gaze drifted down Bullet's torso to his hands.
"Sometimes words take on new meanings, and what seemed like a penance turns into a celebration."
He motioned for Bullet to reach across the bar, and he gave him an awkward one-armed hug.
"I love you, boy, and if I don't tell you enough, I'm damn proud of you. Always have been."
Bullet cleared his throat in an effort to quell the surge of emotions his father's praise unleashed. He watched Biggs limp over to Red and pull her into his arms. He must have said something charming because his mother's gaze softened, and she touched his cheek before pressing her lips to his. Bullet looked away, his eyes immediately finding his girl, and his father's words pushed through his mind.
"Sometimes words take on new meanings,
and what seemed like a penance turns into a celebration. He had reason to celebrate life, all right, and she was sitting across the room holding up her phone. She and the girls were talking on a video call. As quickly as his father's words had come back to him, they were drowned out by another thought.
"She's not here for good. You know that, right?"
"I'm aware, but I'm thinking you probably ought to fix that." Maybe his father wasn't referencing the tattoos on his fingers after all. Finley's eyes shifted as if she felt the weight of his stare, and she waved him over.
"Bullet, we want to ask you something."
He headed over to the table and ran his fingers through her hair.
"What's up, Lollipop?"
"Lollipop!"
came from the phone with a snort. He recognized the voice as Finley's mouthy friend, Isabel. They talked often, and he liked her. She was a firecracker.
"How many licks does it take to get to Finn's sweet scent, Izzy?"
Finley cut her off, earning giggles from the peanut gallery.
Christ, he didn't want to get involved in this hen party.
He started walking away, and Finley grabbed at the back of his shirt.
"Wait, please."
She glared at Isabel. "She'll behave. She's just had too much wine to drink." Isabel held up an empty wine glass.
"That might be true, but I'd say it anyway because it's funny."
"How about we not talk about my girl's body parts?"
He glanced at Finley, who was smiling so brightly he couldn't help but smile too.
"What's up, Angel?"
"We were just thinking, if we bring on kitchen staff, we might need another bartender and a waitress, and we were thinking about hiring Izzy. She could work for my catering company part-time, and work here part-time."
His mind selfishly went to cutting back his hours. He looked at Dixie, then at his mother, and that guilt noose he sported tightened again. He needed a fucking clone to protect the people he loved, so he could spend more time with the one he loved most.
"Why don't we discuss it Sunday?"
Red suggested.
"Sunday. My only day off, and I'm spending most of it without Finley. Sunday was going to fucking suck."
Chapter 17 Sunday blew in with a sudden drop in temperature and fierce wind. Finley had lived in Boston for so long, she'd forgotten how Maryland could be hot as Hades one day and sweater weather the next. As much as she was looking forward to catering the baby shower, she really wanted to curl up on the couch with Bullet, shut out the rest of the world, and disappear into him for an entire day. Since that wasn't an option, she hung up her raincoat, slipped one of her aprons over her long-sleeved gray-and-white mini-dress, and began unpacking the groceries as Bullet carried them into the kitchen of Whiskey Bros. His family hadn't arrived yet, and she hoped to get most of her baking done before their family meeting. Bullet was supposed to go on a ride with his brothers afterward. She had a feeling he needed it, because he'd been a little edgier than normal this week, waking earlier and irritated about work. The only time he seemed completely at peace was in the mornings. He didn't leave for work until 11, which gave them several uninterrupted hours together. When he came home at night, once she was in his arms, their worlds came back together like a long overdue sigh, draining the tension from his body and settling all the longing that had built up inside her all day. "Will you still go on your ride in this weather?" she asked as she laid out the groceries and supplies. They'd gone down to the snake pit yesterday before Bullet had gone to work. As Chickie had promised, they'd gotten a tour of the kitchen, which was three times the size of Whiskey's, and she'd talked with the chef about their menus. By the time they left, several guys had asked when he was going to ride with them again, and he'd been vague with his answers.
"If it clears up."
Bullet shrugged off his leather jacket and tossed it on a chair. His tattoos bled out from under the sleeves of his faded black T-shirt. He pushed a hand through his thick hair and shook off the rainwater. A chain hung from his belt loop to his back pocket, making it almost look as if he'd accessorized with his silver rings. The thought of her man accessorizing gave Finley a tickle. Bullet's wardrobe consisted of dark jeans, faded T-shirts, and a host of leather bracelets and wrist cuffs. He always wore two or three skull or hammered metal rings, but she knew it had nothing to do with aesthetics. She was sure they all had meanings behind them, because one thing she'd learned about Bullet was that everything he added to his body was done purposefully. He moved behind her and wrapped his arms around her waist. He was always doing that, touching, kissing, wanting more of her. And oh, how she always wanted to touch him, too. "You said this baby shower will go on until 2 or 3. If a riot, I'll make sure I'm back by then." "Don't cut your ride short. You don't need to rework your life around me. I'll be available when you get back. Just enjoy yourself and your brothers." She turned in his arms, and the fluttery sensation in her stomach she'd come to expect when they were close climbed into her chest. She reveled in that feeling. "I've enjoyed myself and my brothers for 30+ years. He lowered his lips to hers, taking her in a delicious kiss that brought her up on her toes. He rubbed his beard along her cheek and said, "I love when you do that."
"Get hot and bothered," she teased.
"Go up on your toes like you can't get enough of me." She'd never needed anyone before, but the closer she and Bullet became, the more she realized she'd needed him all along. She'd buried herself so deeply in work for the past several years, she hadn't realized how much emptiness she'd been harboring. Bullet and even Tinkerbell completed her in ways no one and nothing ever had. Whether they were taking walks or Bullet was working on one of his bikes in the garage while she sat nearby, preparing menus and kitchen schedules, or if they were lying in each other's arms beneath the stars, which she didn't think they'd be able to do too much longer as fall was moving in. The three of them were together, and they were happy.
"We're putting down roots.
I will never get enough of you." She pulled him down for another kiss. A little more than an hour later, Dixie came in through the back door, her fiery hair whipping around her face from the wind. Finley looked over her shoulder as she put the Wild King salmon, salads, seared spinach, and coriander yogurt sauce in the fridge.
"Wow. I half expected the Wicked Witch of the West to blow in."
Dixie peeled off her jacket and hung it on a hook by the door. "It's so windy out there. I think we should have indoor options for the fundraiser just in case."
"I was hoping it would die down," Finley said as she began decorating the frosted sugar cookie pizza with slices of strawberries and kiwis.
Dixie eyed the pink and blue cupcakes in a catering box on the counter and the Oreo rattle pops and peanut-shaped tarts cooling on racks by the sink where Bullet was peeling hard-boiled eggs. She put a hand on Bullet's shoulder and said,
"You're so domestic I almost didn't recognize you."
"Finley bribed me with sex."
He winked at Finley.
"I did not."
She felt her cheeks burning. After Bullet had set her on the counter and tried to eat her for brunch, she'd promised to blow his whistle later if he let her get her cooking done. She couldn't very well attend the event reeking of sex. Even though she'd learned her lesson when Bullet went with her anywhere and always carried extra panties. Sometimes that was enough, but when he devoured her, she got so hot and bothered she needed a full-on shower afterward, a cold one. Or the aftershocks alone nearly made her come again. The doors to the bar opened, and Bones strutted in wearing his black leather jacket, a bike helmet in his hand, and the rest of his family on his heels.
"Damn, it's nasty out there, but it sure smells good in here."
Bones set his helmet down and put his arm around Finley as she prepared the frosting for the baby bundles, the peanut-shaped tarts she'd decorate to look like swaddled babies. Half the finished cookies would be blue and half pink, with chocolate chips for eyes.
"What have you done with my brother? Soon he'll be wearing a dress and an apron."
Bullet scowled. Finley whispered,
"I bribed him with sex."
Bones pushed Bullet away from the sink.
"Give me the damn eggs."
Bullet grabbed him by the back of his collar and hauled him away from the sink, with a look so dark Finley feared she'd caused real trouble. Bones threw his arms up in the air and laughed.
"I'm kidding, bro."
He shoved Bullet's shoulder so hard, Bullet released him, still glowering. "Bones has a death wish." Bear sank down to a chair at the table. Dixie laughed as she headed toward the door to the bar.
"I'm going to get the ledgers from the office. Be right back."
Red sidled up to Finley and said,
"There are three things you don't kid about in our world. Women, bikes, and family."
"I didn't mean to cause trouble," Finley said. It was a joke.
You didn't cause trouble, honey, Red assured her.
Bones did. He knows Bullet's been acting like he's got a gorilla on his back lately. Finley made a mental note not to step out of her comfort zone and tease like that again. She was surprised Red had noticed Bullet's edginess, and she wondered if she had any clue as to what was behind it. Finley had tried asking Bullet, but he'd brushed her off each time, changing the subject. Biggs sat beside Bear and pointed his cane at Bones.
"Cut the shit. One day Bullet's gonna let loose on you, and you're gonna be sorry."
Guilt speared through Finley. She knew Bullet and Bones had a special connection, and she'd hate to mess that up. Bullet's lips tipped up, and he held a fist out to Bones, who tapped it with his own. Relief swept through her. She moved a tray of cookies to the counter, distracting herself by spreading pink frosting over the lower half of each cookie and creating tiny pink bows at the top, making the baby bundles. Bullet wiped his hands on a towel.
"Sorry, man," he said to Bones.
"No worries." Bones leaned against the counter. "The weather's supposed to clear up by noon. You coming with us?"
Bullet nodded.
"For a few hours."
Dixie returned with the ledgers, and Bear said,
"Let's get this show on the road, Dix."
An uneasy look passed over Dixie's face. She crossed her arms, uncrossed them, then crossed them again. Finley waited for an explanation, as Dixie had nixed every candidate she'd interviewed for the cook positions, having found something off about each applicant.
"We haven't filled the positions yet," Dixie explained. "Finn spent all last week interviewing, and the applicants are all qualified, but they just didn't feel right. I'm not sure about hiring a stranger."
"You're the one who wanted this," Bullet reminded her.
The gruffness of Bullet's comment rattled Finley. She'd almost forgotten he hadn't wanted her to work there in the first place, much less to expand the bar. She concentrated on adding the chocolate chip eyes to the cookies.
"I know, and Dad, I know you want the expansion, so we have a legacy to carry on for generations. But did you see how busy we were the other night when Finley did the tasting session?"
"Sure did," Biggs said. "Finley's got quite a reputation around here.
We're not just looking at hiring a cook and a dishwasher anymore."
Dixie looked pleadingly at Finley, and understanding finally dawned on her. Dixie was as worried about the staffing as she was. Finley wiped her hands on a towel and said, "She's right. The turnout the other night concerned me, too. It was wonderful, but worrisome." Bullet reached for her, and when she went to him, his arm circled her waist. She loved his support and wasn't sure if he'd noticed she was nervous or if he just wanted to hold her, but she sensed it was both. "We started out looking for two part-time cooks and dishwashers so we could offer shifts, but based on the turnout the other night, which had zero publicity, I think you're looking at a much bigger endeavor than you initially wanted." She felt like she'd somehow let them down, even though she knew this was business, and she'd done nothing more than evaluate their needs.
"I told you I thought this was a bad idea," Bullet said.
Biggs held up his hand, silencing him.
"Let's hear what Finley has to say."
She looked apologetically at Bullet.
He kissed her temple and said, "You're good, Lollipop. Go ahead."
And she breathed a little easier. "My recommendation is to decide what you really want out of this expansion. I believe the goal was to increase profits, which I think you can achieve on a large or small scale, depending on what you want. Jed's only part-time, and Bullet already works more than 60 hours a week. Dixie and Red can't be expected to waitress full-time 7 days a week. So if you offer food all day, then you'll probably need at least two more waitresses, another full-time bartender, two full-time cooks, so they're not working more than 40 hours a week, and then you still need to hire the dishwashers. And if you go that route, it's clear you'll need a manager as well, unless Bullet takes that over. Dixie is fully qualified, of course, but she's managing the auto shop, waitressing here, and doing the books. You'll need someone to handle schedules, and I don't know if you've thought this far ahead, but full-time employees should have health and vacation benefits, too." Bullet and Bear shook their heads.
"That sounds about right," Red said.
"That's what worries me," Dixie explained.
Then our family business will turn into something that's so much bigger it's not going to feel the same. I think Bullet was right about that.
There is another option, Finley said. You could offer food only for lunch, for example. Then you'd need a cook, a waitress, and a dishwasher for, say, noon to three or similar hours. 20 hours a week should do it. You'd still want a backup cook, I think, just in case that employee got sick or hurt or went on vacation. Or you could offer only dinner. But dinner tends to be busier in my experience and would probably require more bartending staff.
Finley, what would you prefer if you were working here? What hours?
Biggs asked.
Me? Well, I think you might find employees eager to work during the day rather than at night, so probably lunchtime.
Bullet tightened his hold on her.
She didn't move back here to work at the bar.
He's not asking me to work here, she said. But I do enjoy being here. I love the people, and I get more time with you and your family. I think it's a great place to work. It's friendly, and sure, the crowd is rougher than what I'm used to, but they're kind and funny and...
Stay, Biggs said.
Finley startled.
Excuse me?
Biggs shrugged.
You're already here. You know the customers. You're the one coming up with the menus. You're with our boy, like family. Stay. Work whatever hours you want.
Work here?
Her mind zoomed through the idea.
Working with Bullet was wonderful, and she'd meant all the things she'd said about enjoying the people. If she worked part-time, she could still do catering.
She looked up at Bullet, who was frowning, and her stomach knotted up.
I don't know if that's a good idea. I haven't had time to find a place to rent for my catering company. That'll probably take me a while, so I really couldn't commit.
I don't want Finley giving up catering, and she's not working nights at any bar, Bullet said.
He looked at his watch and whispered,
You've got to get finished, baby. You have to leave soon.
How could she have gotten so sidetracked? Her head was spinning with the offer and with Bullet's comments. He worked nights. Why didn't he want her there?
I'm sorry, but I really do have to finish up, she said to Biggs, and went back to frosting the other tray of cookies.
She mentally walked through the steps of turning the hard-boiled eggs into baby carriages, using deviled egg mixture for the blankets and sausage slices for the baby's faces, with chocolate sprinkles for the eyes. She could get it done in 20 minutes if she hurried.
Let me help. Red went to the sink. What can I do with the eggs?
Thank you. If you can cut them into halves and remove the yolk, I can make the deviled egg mixture and then slice those sausages. She pointed to a tray of sausages.
I've got the sausages, Dixie said, and grabbed a knife.
Thank you, Finley said.
Finley, we don't want you giving up catering either, Biggs said. You can use this kitchen for your catering business. And as I said, work whatever hours you'd like.
Her eyes nearly bugged out of her head as she turned to face them again. Dixie nodded, smiling like it was the greatest idea ever. Bear and Bones were talking in hushed voices, but their agreement was obvious. Her mind reeled with possibilities. She looked at Bullet, but couldn't read his expression.
What do you think?
He slid an arm around her shoulder, pulled her ear beside his mouth, and whispered,
No nights, Lollipop. Please leave them open for us. And I don't want you giving up your catering job. You love it too much.
Her heart swelled. You're okay with it otherwise?
He nodded and pressed a kiss to her cheek.
I'm okay with whatever you want.
Really?
She asked softly. This is your place, and I know you didn't want me here at first.
I want you with me every second, baby.
What do you say?
Biggs asked.
Her heart was beating so fast.
Bullet wanted to be with her, and they were offering her so much all at once. She forced herself to rein in her spinning emotions and think rationally.
It could be complicated, she finally answered. I wouldn't want to let you guys down, but if I were the only cook, what if I got sick? What if I got hired to cater an afternoon event that was too good to pass up? It could put us all in an uncomfortable position.
Red's hand stilled over the cutting board.
Uncomfortable position? Sweetheart, you'd be our saving grace.
I don't think any one of us wants to hire a crew to take over, or worry about managing people who aren't part of our family.
Yes, but customers need to know they can rely on what you're offering. If you offer lunch, someone should be here to cook it, and if I get sick, I can't be the one to do it.
Red and Biggs exchanged a knowing smile, one that Finley wasn't in on.
"Sweetheart, this business isn't successful because we run a tight ship," Red explained.
"Whiskey Bros has lasted this long because of the connections we create and the bond we have with the community.
Trust and those connections are the very essence of this family business and what we all hoped to preserve when we looked at expanding. Having the right person holding it together is far more important than if you can serve lunch on a Friday."
"This is so much to process. Please don't think I'm ungrateful, but can I take some time to think it over, to talk to Bullet in private?"
"We're in no hurry," Biggs said.
"But she is," Bullet reminded her. 15 minutes later, Bullet had loaded up her van, the rain had stopped, and Finley hugged everyone, including Bones, and promised to make a decision quickly. Bullet leaned into the van and kissed her.
"You good? Know where you're going?"
"Yes, thank you for your help. And Bullet, if you don't want me to work at the bar, that's okay. It won't hurt my feelings."
"I want you with me. I just don't want my girl working nights. But during the day, that's cool with me, babe. The closer you are, the more often I get to make out with you."
He nipped playfully at her neck.
"Now get out of here before I throw you in the back of the van and make you miss the baby shower."
"You can't leave me with that thought in my head."
She grabbed him by the collar and pulled him into another kiss.
"My van has never been christened, so while you're out riding, maybe you should think about all the things you'd like to do to me in it."
His eyes went coal black, and in her most innocent voice she said,
"Ta-ta, sweet man of mine, I must be leaving."
Bullet watched Finley drive away. Then he stalked back into the kitchen, determined to demand a change in his hours.
"Hey, B."
Dixie reached into a cabinet and handed him a pink box. "Finley said to give this to you later, but I'm heading out in a sec." Red and Dixie were watching him expectantly, and guilt swallowed him again. He couldn't reduce his hours. He had to be there to protect them when they were waitressing. Motherfucker.
"Open it," Dixie urged.
He opened the box, took one look at the heart-shaped tart with B and F written on it in blue and pink frosting, and said,
"Fuck. I need to get out of here."
He turned to go outside and smacked into Bear's chest. Without thinking, Bullet grabbed him by the shirt and lifted him off his feet.
"What the hell, B?"
Bear pushed from his grip and Bullet released him.
"What crawled up your ass and died? I can't fucking do this anymore."
He paced by the door, gritting his teeth to keep from saying more.
"Do what? What's got you so upset, baby?"
Bullet glared at her.
"Nothing."
"That's the lionest nothing I've ever heard," she challenged.
"It doesn't matter. There's no resolution."
He stormed out the door and his family followed him out. He turned, ready to give them hell, but Biggs stood in front of the others, leaning on his cane, a barrier to absorb Bullet's wrath. Bullet bit his tongue out of respect for his father.
"Talk to me, son," Biggs said. "You don't have room to keep any more demons trapped inside you."
Bullet clenched his jaw.
"You are one stubborn son of a bitch," Biggs said. "Spit it out before it kills you."
Bullet reached behind his neck with both hands and tipped his face up toward the sky, slamming his eyes shut. Never before had he wanted something so badly. He tried to fight it, tried to do the right thing and keep his damn mouth shut for the sake of his family, but his love for Finley was too strong, and the words flew fast and furious.
"I can't do this anymore, working until midnight 5 days a week, having no time off with Finley. But I can't cut my hours back. I'm fucked, and there's no way out of it."
"About damn time," Bear said under his breath.
"What?"
Dixie asked.
"We were just talking about hours. You couldn't have said something then?"
Biggs held his hand up without turning, silencing her. Bullet glared at Dixie.
I can't cut my hours. Who would protect you and Red?
Protect us?
Dixie strode right past Biggs until she was in Bullet's face. Thought you didn't want to be a hero.
Dixie? Red snapped.
No, I'm not going to shut up.
Dixie crossed her arms, holding Bullet's stare.
I'm not anyone's hero, Bullet seethed.
Bullshit. You're the very definition of a hero any way you look at it. The question is, whose hero do you want to be?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Someone has to protect you and Red.
Yeah?
Challenge rose in Dixie's eyes. Well, here's a news flash. I can protect myself, and no one would dare mess with the wife of the president of the Dark Knights.
Bones and Bear approached, taking a stance on either side of Dixie. Arms crossed, heads held high.
Fuck, he'd taught them too well.
He just never thought he'd be the one facing them down.
She's right, B. No one's gonna screw with them in our bar, Bones said.
You've seen to that, Bullet. You've built iron bars around that place. You've threatened anyone who even thought about causing trouble. You've protected the people in that bar for years to come. That's all you, B. You've given a lifetime to our family, and then some. Don't rob Finley of the life you two deserve.
You've got a girl now, bro, Bear said. You're right to feel all churned up inside, and to want to turn your life inside out for her. I know what that feels like. It hit me like a truck when I fell for Crystal, and it still does every damn time I see her.
Go with that feeling, Bullet. You're not getting any younger, and God knows how you suckered that gorgeous woman into your life. But don't fuck it up out of some misplaced responsibility.
Bullet looked away, choked up with emotions.
Whose hero do you want to be? Dixie asked again. Mine and Mom's? Or Finley's? I hope to God you choose the right one, because I'm pretty damn sick of you being my hero.
She waved her hand toward their other brothers and said,
That goes for all of y'all. I could use some space. And God knows, getting Bullet out of the bar for a few hours at night would be a great start.
She smiled at Bullet and said,
I love you, but I'm overdosing on being protected lately.
Bullet shook his head. Something happens to you or Red, I'll never forgive myself.
The list of things you won't forgive yourself for is already too long, Bullet. Don't let losing Finley be at the top of it, Bones urged.
I'd give my life for her, Bullet said honestly.
How about living your life with her, son?
Biggs stepped up beside Bones.
That'd be a much-deserved step in the right direction.
Swallowing past the lump in his throat, he said,
Thanks, Pop.
Biggs nodded and Red came at Bullet with open arms.
My boy's growing up.
She hugged him so tight it made him laugh.
Ma,
shush up, you big oaf, she said. Just let me be happy that another of my boys has found the other half of his heart.
Bullet's phone rang in his pocket, and his mother released him as he pulled it out. Finley's name appeared on the screen, and he put the phone to his ear.
What's wrong, babe?
I left in such a hurry I forgot the salmon, salads, and dip. They're in the fridge. Do you have time to run them over to 101 Castler Street?
No problem. Be right there.
He ended the call and threw an arm around Dixie's shoulder, following the others into the bar.
You think you can get someone to take over from 8 to midnight Tuesday and Wednesday? And from 5 to midnight Friday and Saturday? Someone big and mean?
No, but I can get Jed, and I'm sure Finn would go crazy if we hired Isabel.
She smiled and said, You're doing the right thing, Bullet, even though I know you have a hard time accepting that. You've protected me my whole life. It's Finley's turn. And more importantly, it's your turn. She loves you, B. I can see it in her eyes.
20 minutes later, Bullet was walking through a living room filled with women and baby paraphernalia, where he gazed into Finley's gorgeous blue eyes. The women were gathered around Lisa Braden, who was trying to calm her screaming baby girl. Bullet set the dishes on the table by Finley.
"Thank you so much," she said, and went up on her toes and kissed his cheek.
"Everything okay?"
He eyed the unhappy baby,
remembering when Truman had first brought Lincoln and Kennedy home after rescuing them from a crack house where their mother had overdosed. They were scared and fussy, but when Bullitt had held them, they'd calmed right down. He didn't know if it was his size or what, but to this day those babies were happy when they were in his arms. And Lord knew he loved holding them.
Lisa's baby, Avery, has been fussy since she got here. She's nursing, so she didn't want to leave her, and the party is for one of her best friends.
He walked over to the crowd of women, and they parted like a deck of cards. He nodded at Lisa, whom he knew well, as she was married to Cole Braden, one of Beau's cousins who lived there in Peaceful Harbor.
"Hi, sweetheart. Can I try to calm your baby girl?"
"Bullitt, what are you doing here?" Lisa asked.
"Finn's my girl. She forgot something, and I brought it over for her."
He thrust his hands forward.
"Give me your princess so you can enjoy the party."
"I'm sure, but she's having a hard time," Lisa said, and handed him the baby.
He settled the baby over his shoulder and spoke softly to her.
"It's okay, sweetheart. Calm down for Uncle Bullitt."
He spread his hand over her back, rubbing in slow circles. As he paced the floor, the baby quieted, save for a few whimpers. She smelled as new and fresh as a warm summer's breeze.
"That's it, little princess. That's a good girl."
"Oh, my gosh," a brunette woman said. "Who are you?"
"I've got twin 8-month-olds who could use a manny if you're free,"
a petite blonde with wide brown eyes pleaded.
"Wait,"
another blonde said anxiously.
"I've got a colicky 4-month-old. I get dibs."
Finley was watching him with an amused and dreamy expression. If he'd had any lingering doubts about his decision to cut back his hours and where he needed to be at night, that look silenced them.
"Sorry, ladies, but all my free time,
and my heart,
is spoken for."
Chapter 18. Finley awoke to the sound of Penny's ringtone. She rolled toward Bullitt's side of the bed and realized she was alone. It had been 2 weeks since Bullitt had mentioned cutting back his hours, and 10 days since Jed had modified his schedule to accommodate the change. Bullitt had been far less edgy ever since, and he'd been sleeping soundly again, which was why she was confused about waking to an empty bed. She reached blindly for her phone and put it to her ear.
"Hey, Pen, what's up?"
"Obviously not you.
What time is it?"
She turned to look at the clock and found a sticky note blocking the numbers. She snagged it and read Bullitt's blocky handwriting.
"Meet me out front."
"Time for you to get up," Penny said, way too cheerily. "I gotta run. I'm meeting Tegan at Jazzy Joe's for coffee. Love you."
The line went dead. Jazzy Joe's was a cafe in town run by twins Jasmine and Joe Carbo. Coffee sounded really good right then. She sat at the edge of the bed, wondering what the heck was going on, then padded over to the bathroom and found another sticky note on the mirror.
"Wear jeans and those sexy lace-up boots."
She couldn't stop smiling as she used the bathroom and brushed her teeth and hair. Her life had changed so much so fast. The morning of the baby shower, she'd thought her life couldn't get any better. Then one of the women at the event had hired her to cater a surprise party for her mother, and Bullitt had broken the news about cutting back his hours at work, and told her that Dixie had mentioned the possibility of hiring Isabel. Finley had been so excited she'd accepted the part-time job with the Whiskies that very night. In the 2 weeks since, she'd had the menus designed and printed, and Isabel had worked out an almost full-time schedule with Dixie, giving her time to also work with Finley, and she'd already put in her notice at the restaurant in Boston. Last Saturday they'd pulled together the final details for the fundraiser, which was taking place in 2 weeks after the charity ride. Sarah's brother was out of ICU, and with any luck he and the baby would be discharged before the event. The fundraiser was being held on the grounds of Whiskey Bros., and they would use it to announce the opening of the kitchen. Finley was going to cook, and all proceeds from food sales, as well as the rally itself, would go to the Beckleys. She gazed out the bedroom window at the backyard as she pulled on a pair of skinny jeans. She and Bullitt had worked in the gardens together last Sunday. His passion for nature,
and for her was boundless, and she loved working with him in the gardens as much as she loved working with him at the bar. It was easy to see how working with his hands, concentrating on bringing life into the world, nurturing it and watching it grow, was cathartic. Just like loving him. As she laced up the boots he loved and threw on a comfy gray sweater, she wondered what he had up his sleeve this morning. Downstairs, she found a Pillsbury cinnamon bun on a plate in the kitchen with raisins in the shape of the letter B on top, along with a cup of instant coffee. He was so thoughtful, but she had to laugh that his possessiveness carried over to the B on the top of the cinnamon bun. Could she fall any more in love with him? She quickly ate the bun, getting more excited by the second, and downed the coffee, which was too bitter, but Bullet had gone to the trouble of making it. It could have been thick as sludge, and she still would have drank it. She put her dishes in the sink and ran out front. "Bullet?" He came out of the garage, wearing his leather jacket and jeans, and carrying something behind his back.
"There's my angel."
Tinkerbell trotted over to Finley, and she knelt to love her up, remembering the first time she'd seen her and screamed, and the morning she'd come over to meet her. She'd been terrified, but Bullet and his family had made her feel safe, and they hadn't stopped since. Bullet knelt beside her and kissed her cheek. He'd trimmed his beard, but it was still long enough to tickle.
"Hey, baby, they got you something."
Was that something a phone call from Penny? He chuckled.
"Someone had to wake you."
He handed her a box wrapped in sparkling silver paper with a big pink bow around it.
"She told me about your dad and his gifts. I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to carry on that tradition of celebrating your milestones."
Tears brimmed in her eyes. "Bullet, what's this for?" she asked as they both rose to their feet. Tinkerbell leaned against her leg.
"Because you're my girl."
She untied the bow and lifted off the top.
"Oh, my gosh, is this leather?"
Bullet took the box as she withdrew a gorgeous black leather biker jacket with big silver zippers, just like his, only made for a woman.
"Turn it around."
She did, and her heart leapt. "Whiskies" was embroidered across the back in script.
"You got me a jacket from the bar? I love it."
He set the box down and gathered her in his arms.
"That's not a bar jacket, babe."
A spark of possession glimmered in his eyes.
"You're branding me?"
she giggled.
"Protecting.
More like claiming."
She tugged him down for a kiss and said,
"I love it, thank you."
"Try it on."
He held it as she slipped her arms into it.
"It's so soft. Does it look okay?"
He made a guttural noise and hauled her in for a greedy kiss, leaving her breathless.
"Wow, I like getting presents from you."
"You look hot as fuck, baby. Seriously, I shouldn't let you go out wearing those painted-on jeans and that jacket."
"Let me. Do we need to have a talk about this?"
He chuckled and shook his head. "Good. Because now that I've seen your reaction, I'm going to make a point of wearing jeans around you more often." His arms swooped around her waist, and he lifted her with one arm and kissed her again.
"You might never leave the house if you do."
"I'm not sure my employers will be happy about that. You know, I have a real job now."
"This employer has no qualms with you spending all your time in his bed."
He set her on her feet and put an arm around her neck.
"Come on, babe, we're going for a ride."
He led her into the garage to his shiny black motorcycle and patted the leather seat.
"Hop on, baby girl."
"I've never been on a motorcycle before."
"Until a few weeks ago, you'd never had sex outside. And until two nights ago, you'd never had sex on top of the washer while it was running. I seem to remember you enjoying both so much we needed repeat performances."
She was unable to deny the thrill of either. He put his arms around her again and said,
"You can always trust me, baby. I'd never put you in harm's way, and I promise to go slow."
He tucked her hair behind her ear, and his gaze softened and somehow intensified at once.
"I love you, Finley. And I want you with me when I ride. Please do this for me."
"You..."
Emotions clogged her throat.
"I love you, baby. I love how you stand up for what you believe in. I love how you believe in me,
and how you love Tinkerbell. I love you in your frilly dresses, and I love you lying naked beneath me. I love all of you, and I want, I hope, you'll try this for me, because riding is a big part of who I am." She could barely breathe as she struggled to keep the tears in her eyes from falling. "I love you, too." She threw her arms around his neck, and he lifted her into his arms, both of them laughing and kissing. "So much, Bullet. I love you so much."
"Me too, baby. Kiss, kiss."
"God, it feels good to finally tell you." "For me too." She kissed him again, and as he set her feet on the ground, she said, "I'll try to go for a ride, but if I get scared, you'll stop?"
"Always, baby."
"Where will we go? Do you have a favorite place you like to ride?"
"No. The open road has always been my place."
He put Tinkerbell in the house and gave Finley a lesson in motorcycle safety. She tried really hard to concentrate, but she was busy silently repeating everything he'd said about loving her, so she'd never forget a word of it. When he helped her onto the bike and gave her a pink helmet with "Whiskies" written in black cursive on the sides and said, "I had it made to match your jacket," she fell even more in love with him. The emotions were so overwhelming they mounted inside her, taking up all of her until she couldn't keep them in any longer.
"I love you," she whispered. "I love you more than words can say, Bullet, and I just want to tell you over and over again so you never forget."
"I'll never forget, baby, but I hope you'll never stop telling me anyway." He helped her onto the bike, then climbed on in front of her and showed her how to hold him. Wrapping herself around Bullet felt as natural as baking a cake. This was where she belonged, with Bullet, no matter where he was.
"Ready, Angel?"
"As ready as I'll ever be." The motorcycle roared to life, vibrating like thunder beneath her. As good as that felt, it didn't feel half as incredible as the way it rumbled up Bullet's body, humming through his back and radiating against her heart. "I think I'm going to love this," she yelled. He lifted her hand to his lips and pressed a kiss there, before pulling her arms around him tighter and putting on his helmet. As he drove down the driveway, she felt like she was flying. She inhaled the grassy, leafy scents of fall, which took on a sharper, more vibrant aroma. He stopped at the end of the long driveway to ask how she was doing, and she gave him a thumbs up. He revved the engine and turned onto the main drag, heading out of Peaceful Harbor and toward their newest adventure. Bullet stopped to check in with Finley two or three times during the beginning of their ride, and he was thrilled that she not only wasn't freaking out, but was bubbling over with enthusiasm. Seeing her on his bike, with that leather jacket and helmet, was almost the biggest aphrodisiac he'd ever encountered. But nothing was more of a turn-on than Finley Wilson wearing one of her frilly little dresses and that sunshine smile. About an hour outside of the harbor, he turned off the highway, heading up a narrow mountain road, to give Finley the experience of riding the back roads. The sun had kicked up, gracing them with a gorgeous day. If he were riding with the guys, he'd keep on going for hours. But as incredible as it felt to have Finley pressed up against him, he wanted her in his arms. He physically ached with love for her, like his heart had never fully functioned, and she made it work harder than it ever had. That was a new and exquisite pain, one he hoped never ended. He followed the windy mountain roads until they came to a meadow, when Finley yanked at his jacket, indicating she wanted to stop. He pulled over and removed his helmet, stepping off the bike to see his bright-eyed girl.
"You okay?"
She tugged at her helmet, and he helped her take it off. "That was amazing, fantastic. It was so romantic holding on to you. I can't explain it, but..." She rose onto her toes, still straddling the bike, and pressed her lips to his.
"I wish I knew more about romance for you, baby."
Her smile cut straight to his heart. "Just saying that is more romantic than anything I could dream up." She grabbed him by the jacket and pulled him closer. "I get it now. All of it, Bullet. The closeness of the club, the way these rides become a part of you. The reason you sometimes get edgy when you don't have a chance to ride."
"I don't get that way much when I'm with you, do I?"
"No, but
Sometimes I see something there, and then when you come home from work and step off your bike, that look is gone.
That's me coming home to you, baby.
He lifted her off the bike and kissed her hard. He ran his fingers through her hair and held on tight with both hands, angling her face up so he could gaze into her eyes.
You slay my demons and make everything seem possible. I want everything with you, Finns. I want days of riding and nights of making love until the sun comes up. And right now, pretty girl,
he said as he lifted her into his arms and carried her across the meadow,
I need to love you.
She laughed and kissed him as he carried her through the tall flowers and grass to the far side of the meadow, out of sight from any passers-by.
He lowered her to her feet, taking her in another sensual kiss. You okay here? He asked against her lips.
She pushed his jacket from his shoulders without hesitation or embarrassment, and that trust nearly did him in. He tugged off his shirt and laid it on the ground. Their mouths came together in slow, loving kisses as they undressed each other and sank down to the grass. Cool air brushed over their skin, but her flesh was warm to the touch, gorgeous in the sun's rays.
God, I love you, baby, he said between urgent kisses as he loved every inch of her body, worshipping her scars and that heavenly paradise between her legs. He guided her legs over his shoulders, devouring her, teasing over the special spot that made her quiver and shake. She pulled at his hair, holding his mouth tight against her swollen sex as he took his fill.
Please, Bullet. He lifted her hips, feasting on her, feeling the rush of her approaching orgasm in her quickening breaths, the flexing of her thighs. He gripped her ass, holding it tight in the way he'd learned made her climaxes even more intense. She cried out, her body bucking wildly as she shattered against his mouth. He didn't relent, holding her tighter, plunging his tongue deeper through the very last pulse of her release. Then he sheathed his cock and drove into her in one hard thrust.
Ah! She cried out as his mouth came down over hers. She was right there with him, meeting every thrust of his hips, every stroke of his tongue, with an eager, loving motion of her own. Every breath she took, every noise she made, roused his passion. Long, surrendering moans came from both of them as they yielded to their love. As they soared up toward the clouds, he was filled with an incredible sense of completeness. They lay together for a long while afterward, until Bullet had no choice but to reluctantly break their connection so he could take care of the condom. He helped her on with her panties and sweater and put on his briefs, still too hot to be dressed. Then he lay on his back with Finley tucked against his side. Her thigh moved over his, and she ran her fingers along his chest. He laced their hands together and kissed her knuckles.
When we're close, she said softly, I feel like we fall into this world of our own, and nothing else matters or exists. Is that terribly selfish? I mean, the real world is out there. Poor Sarah is struggling to heal her family and make ends meet, and people around the world are suffering, and here we are in this blissful meadow.
You're the least selfish person I know.
No, not even close. That would be you.
She unlaced their fingers and touched his skull ring.
Is that for the Dark Knights?
No, it was my grandfather's. The other one I wear was my Uncle Axel's, my father's brother. He died when I was on tour, and Bear held onto it for me.
But you wear three sometimes.
The third was my old man's. He gave it to me when I went into the military.
Do you think you'll ever tell your family about the time you were in the hospital? The truth of how you almost died?
He shifted his eyes up to the clear blue sky. Talking with Finley about his past was easier now, since they'd talked about it quite a few times. She was too curious to let many questions go unanswered, and he knew this one bothered her, because not only did she hate lies as much as he did, but she loved his family. She was too big-hearted to let it go.
She straddled him, and his blonde angels smiled down on him. How long were you in the hospital?
Several weeks in the hospital, and a couple months of rehab. I came home about 8 months after I was discharged.
You're not going to answer me about telling them, are you?
She didn't say it accusingly. She said it with acceptance and without judgment, and that made him hurt in a whole new way. "Babe, I can think of 100 reasons not to tell them, but not one reason to do it." Her expression turned serious. "Do you think they'd be hurt knowing you didn't tell them in the first place?"
"Definitely. They'd want to know all the details, and who knows what kind of shit that'll bring up. Some things are just better left unsaid."
"Are you protecting them or yourself?"
Again, there was no judgment, just the need to understand shining in her eyes.
"Both, to be honest."
She nodded and ran her finger over the names tattooed on the right side of his chest.
"Would it bother you to tell me whose names these are?"
"Fallen brothers, guys I couldn't save."
She squinted, lowering her face so she could look more closely.
"There are so many I can barely read most of them."
"They're not for anyone else to read, they're for me."
Her gaze met his.
"Should I not try?"
"No, babe, my body is your body, go ahead."
She shifted so she was lying on his other side, and began whispering the names as she read them and pressing kisses over each one.
"Dreamer. Kiss. S. Nelson. Kiss. Brinks, Michael Z. Kiss, kiss."
He closed his eyes against the pang of painful memories accompanying each one. When he'd started honoring his fallen brothers, he hadn't known if he'd remember them, but with each name she spoke, he knew he'd never forget. Many he hadn't known well, some he'd met on missions, known them for only minutes or hours before they were killed. Others he'd known for years. He listened to her sweet voice, concentrating on that instead of the heartache.
"Daniel, kiss. Gunner, kiss. Chip, buzz. Kiss, kiss. M. Martinez, kiss."
Her hand stilled on his skin, and a chill rushed down his spine. The air around them, the very atmosphere, turned colder. His eyes flew open, and he grabbed her hand, unsure of what she'd sparked and afraid he'd tumble into a flashback. But when his eyes met hers, the fear in them revealed the chill he'd felt. Her hands trembled within his, and he bolted upright.
"What is it? What's wrong?"
"I.A. Rush."
Tears streamed down her cheeks. Wails burst from her lungs, and she turned away, sobbing into her hands.
He knew. He just fucking knew that was her guy. The man she'd lost in the war.
He scooped her into his lap, holding her as she cried.
"Baby, I'm so sorry. Oh, Christ, Finley. That's the man I was carrying when I got hit. I tried to save him."
His mind reeled back to the battlefield, and he fought against the mounting fear, the uncontainable anger that consumed him when he thought of that last battle. And then, like he'd stepped in front of a moving vehicle, the realization crashed into him.
Jesus, he'd fucking killed Finley's guy.
"Ian Aaron Rush, that was his name,"
she said through her tears.
"He went by Aaron."
She buried her face in his neck, her tears soaking his skin, her heartache drowning him. He felt sick, needed air. His head fell back, and he gulped long, painful inhalations. He was vaguely aware of her stilling against him, of her hands on his cheeks.
"Bullet? Bullet, it's okay. You were with him. I always thought he died alone, but you were there."
Her words flew at him like darts. How could he tell her the truth? She climbed off his lap with panic in her teary eyes. He sat up on his knees, dragging air into his lungs.
"Bullet, breathe, honey. Breathe, you're okay. You're here with me, not back there."
She put her shaky arms around him, but he broke free and pushed to his feet, the spiky grass poking into his skin. He didn't care. He deserved the pain.
"Fuck. It's not a flashback. It's the fucking truth of it all."
Confusion rose in her eyes.
"I don't understand."
"I killed him, Finley. If I hadn't been carrying him, he wouldn't have been hit in the chest, and you'd be with your guy right now, not here with the one who killed him."
Her jaw hung open, her entire body shaking.
"No. No, 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 Bullet."
She pushed to her feet, lifting them in quick succession as she stepped on the prickly grass and hopped back onto his shirt. Fresh tears tumbled down her cheeks.
"Don't do this. You didn't kill him. Aaron died of the wound in his leg. It severed his femoral..."